Today I'm interviewing Cassie Nicholson, who is the Chief Parliamentary Counsel. This role is one that lawyers often don't think about, but is essential to what we do as lawyers, as it's her office that author the majority of legislation that lawyers are tasked with applying around New Zealand. I'm going to be speaking with her about the importance of understandable legislation and about being able to find legislation both for lawyers and for members of the public.
PCO Parliamentary Counsel Office is the New Zealand's drafting and publication for legislation office. So we develop and publish all the law for New Zealand, principal, mostly acts, but also a significant amount of secondary legislation. IRD do some of their own, but other than that, we do most of the principal legislation. So that's the acts, Land Transport Act, the RMA, you know, all the big pieces of legislation that govern our country. And in that, you know, our objective in doing that is to, you know, make law that's fit for purpose, accessible and constitutionally sound, so high quality legislation.
It's interesting to hear you say that you've got your hands on most principal legislation, because when at law school we go through how a bill gets passed, you know, the role of PCO doesn't really get mentioned. So how does that process look practically?
Well, developing legislation starts always with an idea. That idea might come from lots of places, sometimes from a minister's stroll around field days, or it might come from pandemic rushing through the country. You know, those ideas about what needs to change in the law come from lots of places. But then that idea gets developed up in a department, and then there starts to be conversations, ideally early conversations with us, because any idea can be either a great or a bad idea, but translating that into legislation is a process in itself. And that legislative design process, getting that idea well crafted, well implemented, is something that really benefits from constructive conversations and lots of decisions about how to do it that matter just as much as what the actual idea is. And so we get involved sometimes in early conversations. Cabinet needs to decide off on the idea itself, and then we start actually work crafting the legislation that's going to implement it, which then goes back to cabinet through the process. So yes, we are a bit invisible in the system, but we have a really important part to play in ensuring that what comes out of the system is well designed.
So from your perspective, what does well-designed legislation look like?
Well, we have a bit of a wheel to describe that. So it looks, we talk about, you know, wanting great law for Aotearoa New Zealand. I think when we first sort of set that objective, people, you know, internally and externally said to us, well, how can it ever be great? You know, don't we want good enough law, or if in the circumstances, with the time allows, you know, all the, because there's a lot of things that can take away from great law. But we are always striving for the law to be accessible, for the law to be fit for purpose and for constitutional soundness. And so it's that combination of things that really makes for great law.
So when you talk about accessibility, obviously part of that is being easy to understand. Mm. How do you deal with the fact that legislation often has a number of different audiences that you're having to write for?
Yeah, that's tricky. And who your audience is something that you'll be thinking about quite a lot. So if you're drafting financial markets legislation, you'll be thinking about the people using that legislation as compared to the Wills Act, or, you know, that there's a very different audience, and that will inform the way you choose to draft your legislation. It might go down to word choice. You know, in financial markets context, you're happier to use terminology that makes sense in that context because it's more accessible, in fact, for those stakeholders. And in legislation that applies more generally, you'll be looking for more guidance. You might use a flowchart. You might use plainer language. If you've got time, you do as much as you can to cater for the audience.
Absolutely. And in those specialist areas that just mentioned, financial markets, how do you deal with the fact that there's often a lot of institutional knowledge and background information that you're sort of having to wade into in drafting new legislation?
It's always a challenge. And, you know, the thing I think that's important to remember is a piece of law can't do everything. It's the bones, if you like, on which a regulatory system has to be built. It's always going to be supplemented by guidance, by FAQs, by the things that will take that legislation and make it usable for all the contexts in which it needs to work. But it needs to still be well-crafted so that the people writing that guidance can understand it.
Would you say then primarily the legislation is probably addressed to the explainers? It's addressed to the lawyers and the people who might assist others in understanding it? Or does it need to be accessible for lay people as well?
One important lay person we want it to be accessible for is the members of parliament, for example. So at the very least, the people who are our instructors, all of those people are people who need to be able to read and understand the legislation so that they know what they're passing, what they're implementing and then what will be implemented. We do need it to be accessible for the explainers, for the regulators, for the lawyers. And we probably think that even that ordinary person on the street is unlikely to go to an act that much for their problems. So even me, when my driver licence expired after 2 years, I went and looked up the FAQs rather than the driver licensing rules, right? Because you can't write legislation like the set of FAQs, so it's not that easy.
So the process you described before is sort of a departmental or cabinet-led legislation. Is PCO involved in members' bills and things like that as well?
Yeah, we are, but we get involved then at a different point in the process. Okay. Because members' bills, you know, they go in the famous tin, I don't know if you've heard about the biscuit tin, get drawn out, you know, and introduced. At that point, they've been worked on by the Office of the Clerk, by their drafters, and we get involved and they get sent to Select Committee, and that's where the Parliamentary Council and government departments come to assist the Select Committee.
So readability is really only half the question when it comes to access. Actually being able to find legislation is another really important part of the story. So what role does PCO play within that?
Well, our website, the New Zealand Legislation website, is, I guess we think of it as our shop window, as a really important authoritative source of legislation for New Zealand. We've worked really hard to make it searchable. We're continuing to look at further improvements for different types of users. It's a constant source of sort of development and challenge for us. And I think that I guess there's two things when you think about users. You're thinking firstly, what do they need to know and how can they best find it? That's an area we would still like to develop more for the website.
And in addition to primary legislation, PCO also has a role with secondary legislation as well. So first of all, what is secondary legislation as far as you're concerned?
So Acts, our primary legislation, what gets passed by Parliament. Secondary legislation, a lot of those acts, they can't do all the work. They can't do all the heavy lifting. So civil aviation, all the rules that sit around how planes take off, or drones being able to be in our airspace, for example, all of the details there could never all be passed through Parliament. You'd need far longer than a three-year term to get through the legislation that they would need. So the acts will delegate down to someone else, for example, Civil Aviation Authority, MPI, Teachers Board, to make rules, to make other, what we call secondary legislation that sits under the primary legislation. And that, at that point, you get all the rules, all the detail, all the further prescription needed to support the legislation to make sure that the whole package delivers the outcomes the government's seeking.
And so a lot of it's being created at a departmental level or even by councils and groups like that. How do you deal with the fact that there's such a diverse range of sources for that secondary legislation?
Well, I think it's, I think we've discovered over the last sort of 10 or so years that that a lot more of that secondary legislation has been created, than the system perhaps really realised. And so it's been... In fact, we know more about the extent of delegation than we, way more than we used to know. Some of the excess of delegation also has been a concern, and how to find what has been delegated has been a concern. I don't know if you remember, but we had a whey protein incident some years back in about 2014, and there was a big inquiry over it, and one of the big concerns that the inquiry had was we couldn't find the rules from MPI. We couldn't even tell where they stopped because we couldn't find the right rules. So getting access to that secondary legislation, making sure that definitely the regulator but also the people governed by it can find that legislation is really important. So PCO drafts and publishes some of that secondary legislation, but mostly only the stuff that goes through cabinet, mostly only the sort of most significant bits of it. A lot of the other rules require expertise and technical skills that has been placed with another agency. But they will be of really diverse skills and subject matter, and they'll have really different stakeholder groups. So it's quite challenging to know what the answer is for providing the best access to that secondary legislation.
And so we end up in a situation then, like the example you just gave, where there can be laws that apply but nobody knows where they are or what they say.
Yes, we were trying to do something about that, because that's very far from ideal, obviously, very far from great.
And so what's the work you're doing around that then?
So we've been doing this really big project, Access to Central Police Station project, for a number of years. Effectively, what we're really trying to do is provide better visibility of that secondary legislation through our website, through the New Zealand Legislation website. And the first part of it has actually been finding all of those empowering provisions and knowing who the agencies are that do it, because I think when we started this process, Regulations Review Committee thought there were 30, 40, maybe 50. We found 115, so agencies, I think, that we think make this kind of secondary legislation. And that's, we've been through this massive legislative exercise of categorising all the empowering provisions, tracking them down and labelling them so that we now can be very clear about what empowers secondary legislation. We found 2,900-ish, I think, across the statute book, and we had to do a piece of law that fat to kind of get them all labelled and correctly. So that in itself was a massive source of more certainty and clarity for the system, because now we can track them. What the next phase looks like is really looking at the phase we're currently in, is sort of improving the system in various ways. So something we've done in the meantime is improve the connections between the acts and their secondary legislation that exist on our own website. So now you can go to Civil Aviation Act and there'll be another tab on it that says what civil aviation rules are. So rather than just being bits that aren't connected on the website, you can see those connections and you can start to understand what the total picture looks like. The next step is trying to get those connections to the stuff that sits outside of our website. So those are the those might be published on their own agency's own websites. They might be notified in the Gazette. There's loads of different ways in which those things are published at the moment. What we're working on is how do we get a more consistent approach to publication, better standards in how we're publishing those things, more certainty, more clarity about versions and consolidation and keeping the historic record there. And how do we create links so that really either it's published on our website or there's a link through to their website so that we can actually access in from multiple points.
And so is there an effort to centralise a lot more of that information as well by bringing it almost home to the legislation itself?
Yeah, so we've got a vision for centralisation, but equally we're very conscious that it's a massive stock out there. So we're talking sort of probably 5 to 1 what PCO already publishes, so it's a really significant job to centralise everything. We're also conscious that might not be the best outcome for access in all cases. So if you're dealing with MPI kind of legislation, secondary legislation, it might make most sense for you to go to their website where it's going to integrate with their guidance. You're going to see all the, you're going to become familiar with how to navigate your way around, what your rules mean and what the impact will be for your organisation or for you as a farmer. So that might be easier than going to a central New Zealand legislation website where that legislation won't be as connected into all the additional information that you need to know. But what we do want is that it's really clear that it's secondary legislation when it's on their websites, and that there are ways of navigating between our two websites such that it's really, there's sort of no wrong path in, basically.
You mentioned earlier the influence of a global pandemic on your work. Can you describe a little bit as to what that's meant for this unit over the last few years?
It's really been a massive series of enormous kind of load for the office to respond to. And Access was a big part of that too. So when we first got involved, the secondary legislation, the kind of COVID orders, were developing at a really very fast pace. In fact, speed and complexity has been a picture of just the speed of evolution of the problems, speed of knowledge of the problems is a real challenge for good lawmaking. And when we got involved originally, they were being published, I think, on the Health Ministry Health website. you know, our skill, our expertise is in drafting and in publication. So we brought that into the OBD website, our website, and therefore we've been able to provide a more centralised place for people to come to for those orders, and which was really vital at times when they were coming to force sort of basically of a 9+1, you know. So that was, but the amount of the orders was really challenging, the speed of the development was really challenging, and just the fact that you were asking the orders to govern the whole of New Zealand through something that's just really quite small and such so many different situations that you're trying to cover at the same time, those are really challenging things to do in a short space of time.
Yeah, so does PCO have to engage with public stakeholders directly? Is that part of the role?
We really don't do that because the departments, the policy has been set by the departments, so they are the front door, if you like, for stakeholders. But we're always interested in those stakeholder concerns and, of course, in select committees where they're listening and understanding what those concerns are.
So you also have a role then of going back to the department and saying, have you thought about doing it this way?
Well, that's a very iterative process. So, I mean, if you think about, take a COVID rule like wearing a face mask, it's one thing to say everyone should wear a face mask, but then all the questions that come up once you start to write those rules, well, what is a face mask? What qualifies? Is a scarf enough or not? Who has to wear one? Does a child? What if you want to eat? And then you get to the questions like, well, it's really hard to write this rule in a to be consistent and work well for the future. Do you need exemption power? You know, so there are all those, it's a very iterative process that goes between us and a department to make sure that we've teased out all the issues and questions.
I mean, obviously one thing with COVID was that it was a global experience. Were you looking to other countries to inform how you approach that, or was it very much a New Zealand-specific approach?
I think probably both. With any, especially in that context, you're working with what you've got, and what we had originally was the Health Act, and then we developed bespoke legislation. And so different countries have different empowering legislation that will affect really what they can do. But for certainly we gleaned things from overseas when it was useful, so face coverings was a useful one when we looked at Australia. But yeah, it was a mixture of both.
So you mentioned before sitting out on select committees and hearing feedback there. How do you find engaging with that process in particular?
It's always fascinating. You know, you want your select committee process to achieve two main things. One, make sure that citizens are getting a chance to participate in making the law. That's a really, it's a good testing of the law. It's a good participation and opportunity for the MPs to hear from them and understand the kinds of issues that the law raises for people. So it's a democracy game, but it's also a really important quality of law game, because it's really hard to write law that's going to work in 100% of the scenarios. You're trying to cast your mind wide and also see into the future, and so you need to and sometimes you uncover things through the select committee process that you didn't understand. And so all the problems come out, all the issues, and they might be big or they might be small, but understanding those really helps us make sure the law is flexible enough to be resilient for the future, provides enough certainty. You know, it's well designed for the outcomes.
So one thing that we've started to see recently is the innovation of revision acts.
Yeah.
So what's the process for a revision act?
So that's really different from a normal bill. So if a normal bill starts with an idea, a revision bill starts with, we're not going to have any new ideas, right? We're trying to take an old law and move it into being more accessible. So the Contract and Commercial Law Act is a good example, which started with a number of different acts that were then revised in a policy neutral way to then be enacted in a new piece of legislation. It's quite a challenging process to change the law without changing the law. And we find it's quite resource intensive and time consuming to really develop more accessible legislation that doesn't create new issues. Now, I think it's a continuing evolution that we're looking at different ways in which we can both speed up revision and add some benefits for agencies, because one of the frustrations we've found is that there are lots of small issues that you uncover in that process about the way the law works that you'd like to address. But if you're just taking the exact thing and making it into a new law, you can't address them. So we're trying to find ways in which we can address some of the niggles without it being the big ideas that are changing.
So having a revision that also just updates details to make it make more sense.
That's right. And so we've added some things as the powers, and we've created some additional processes that we're going to be trialling in the next while.
Now, you mentioned during your answer there that it's quite a labour-intensive task, and obviously you're responsible for all of the primary legislation and a good slice of secondary legislation. So what sort of resource does PCO have to throw at the problem?
So we have around about 40 drafters, up or down, 35 to 40 drafters. It has been a really intense period for us in the last few years with COVID and with the government's had a really ambitious legislative program. But alongside our drafters, we also have editorial staff and publishing staff who are really vital to ensuring the law is, as error-free as it can be and as well-written, and to helping to publish it on the website. And, of course, lots of good IT folk and things that help support us.
So legislative drafter sounds like quite a specific role. What's the pathway to being a legislative drafter?
You can come in with a couple of years' experience, or you can come in with lots of experience and from previous legal experience. And I think what really brings people to our office is the chance to work on issues and as part of a system that you really are really fascinating. We get to deal with front page news every day, but also the really satisfying bits of law that make a big difference to how Aotearoa functions.
So it is a role for lawyers?
It is definitely a legal role, but it's a sort of more creative and analytical legal role than some.
Yeah, it does seem very different from an advocacy-focused role where you've got a client, you're advancing one perspective, you're sort of having to sit in the middle and balance things out for the long term.
Yeah, well, we're working for the government, but we are very much trying to bring a long-term perspective and a perspective about, what good law looks like.
So we've talked a little bit about the access side of the equation, but you've said as well that you're looking for things that are fit for purpose and constitutionally sound as well. So when you're looking at fit for purpose, what's the measure that you're using to determine that that's been met?
Yeah, so, we always test, do you need this law? And that might be a big question, or it might be more often it's like, do you need this particular rule, or is it actually taken care of by the system really? Because we don't want lots of unnecessary law cluttering things up. Because law, once it's made, it's hard to change, so it becomes a problem. We test whether, we ask lots of workability questions. Is it, from our understanding and our experience? And we're trying to ensure that the law is certain for people so that they know what is required of them. But there's also a level of flexibility so that it can adapt as it needs to, because we know that we can't, that no one can get it right completely. So it either needs to be flexible enough at a sort of principle level so that it applies for a range of situations like fear and misleading conduct, or it needs to be able to be capable of being changed at a lower level so that it can adjust as circumstances require something different.
And in terms of constitutional soundness, how does your role fit within achieving that?
Well, all the time issues will come up around, you can think about, for example, powers to make secondary legislation. So when we create a power to make secondary legislation, we want that power to be scoped appropriately to actually deliver the outcomes Parliament's thinking is going to get through that, not to be so wide that the maker could do other things, unexpected things through those powers. So there should be tests, there should be safeguards around that make it appropriate to give that law-making power, just really significant power, to someone who's not Parliament. That's an example. But we can get involved in questions around what the process is, for example, like advising that we think longer is needed select committee for this bill to be done, or those sorts of issues will come up all the time.
You mentioned earlier using things like diagrams and examples. That's reasonably novel for New Zealand legislation. How do you make the decision that that's an appropriate way to communicate what you're trying to achieve?
I think I mean, the key is communication, right? Writing the law is a problem-solving and analytical kind of job, but it's also about communication. And if you think that that people would be better informed, better understand the concept if they have, for example, an example, for example, or if you think the ideas can be represented with a flowchart in a way that helps people step through and understand it, those are the sort of scenarios. I guess there's always a trade-off. So there's always a risk that an example or a flowchart or guidance will actually legally complicate it, because either you get it wrong or you suggest that you've got to change it because they haven't got all the different scenarios there. Or, you know, so it's always a trade-off as to, are you introducing additional complexity or are you actually better communicating it? And there's no general rules about that. You actually just have to make that judgment as a draft.
So you've spoken about some of the long-term projects that you're working on here, but obviously this is a work in progress. Where would you like to see our legislative landscape in 5 or 10 years, and what's the work that you want to see take place over that time frame?
Oh, that's a big question. I really want us to learn from the work we're always doing, so and then continue to improve the models that we are developing in our legislation, with continue the work that we're doing to in terms of plain language, and continue to get more robust legislative provisions that learn from the previous experience. So take COVID, for example. We know some things now that we didn't know before about our law. Move those forward so we build in better robustness and flexibility in law going forward. There are issues that come up frequently through our system that if we can learn better, have better ways of learning from those, we will design more robust legislation going forward, rather than treating every act as its own individual experience. So our law has to work together as a whole, and we want that. But we know that going back to fix up things is an enormous exercise. Revision teaches us that. The access to legislative legislation projects has taught us that. It's really hard to fix up the stock. We need to keep trying that, but we need to build in improvement and continuous improvement as we go forward so that we've got a better sort of legislation for the future.
That's obviously a little bit controlled by the government of the day, though, in terms of the projects that they're wanting to work on, though. And obviously when you are tinkering or having to pass multiple amendments, does that become quite difficult to make legislation accessible?
Multiple amendments are one of our the bugbears, if you like, and they're very challenging to make work well. One of the questions we'll always ask with a heavily amended act is it now time to actually just do a replacement? Should we take the additional time needed to not just do these series of quick fixes, but is this get over there? The hurdle to it's now time to actually put it all together and redo it. That's not so much a question of the government of the day, it's more a question of do people have time that is required to do that project, or is there a way in which we can do that work alongside?
And I guess in some ways the worse the legislation is in terms of complexity, the harder it is to undertake that revision task as well.
That's true, but really the win for the government and for New Zealand is that less complex, more accessible legislation results in better compliance and better, more effective outcomes, therefore, for the country. So it's a balance.
Yeah. Well, that's all the questions that I had, but are there any other topics that you'd like to cover that we can sprinkle into the conversation?
Not really, other than I guess doing a pitch for what a great job legislative drafting is.
Oh, well, I'll ask a question and I'll introduce
you. Yeah, sure.
We talked earlier about what it takes to be a legislative drafter, so I'll ask you, is legislative drafting something you'd recommend to lawyers?
I think it's one of the most fascinating jobs in government, and not only do you get to sort of work on these really core issues of the day, but you're using your legal skills to analyse and creatively solve problems and then communicate them. And you're working with a team of people in terms of your instructors in the department, policy and legal framework to actually deliver an outcome that you see then play out for New Zealand. And part of a really amazing, fascinating conversation through Parliament and through the whole legislative process that just really, really satisfying to get involved into. And you just see the consequences of what value you add every day.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.